RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
Welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. Please get to us with any questions, comments, or smart remarks. CrushPerformance.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you are on Facebook, join our performance group, The Talent Grid, on Facebook. You can apply there and we'll let you in. You just have to apply. Going into our second episode on our obesity series, last week we had a fantastic conversation with Dr. Arya Sharma, sort of setting the tone as to what obesity looks like on the globe. Right now, worldwide obesity has more than doubled since 1980. In 2008, there were 1.4 billion adults, 20 and older, who were overweight. Of these, over 200 million men and nearly 300 women were obese. 65% of the world's population live in countries where overweight and obesity kills more people than underweight issues. More than 40 million children under the age of 5 were overweight in 2010, and the number continues to climb. Overweight and obesity are the fifth leading risk factors for global deaths. Approximately 2.8 million adults die each year as a result of being overweight or obese. In addition, 44% of the diabetes burden, 23% of heart disease, and between 7 and 41% of certain cancers are attributed to being overweight and obese. The kicker, once again, obesity is 100% preventable. On today's episode, we get into the very sensitive topic of childhood obesity and childhood diabetes. Over 422 million people have diabetes right now, and it's one of the leading causes of death in the world. 1.5 million deaths per year are attributed to diabetes. 90% of all diabetes is type 2, and type 2 diabetes in children has risen right along with the obesity rates. Today, we'll visit with Dr. Rena LaFrance, lead physician of the Pediatric Center for Weight and Health at the Misericordia Hospital, and Dr. Mary Jetha, pediatric endocrinologist at the University of Alberta and the Stollery Children's Hospital. Let's kick it off and start with a conversation with Dr. Rena LaFrance.
Now, Dr. LaFrance, let me just start off with this. You know, we get inundated and maybe bombarded with all these statistics, and statistics are important for sure, but I'm not going to lie to you. I get incredibly alarmed when something like the World Health Organization makes a statement that this is the first generation in the history of mankind that will have a shorter lifespan than their parents. When we look at statistics like obesity in children has tripled in the last 30 years, and children who grow up obese live 10 to 20 years shorter, and all these crazy statistics that are scary for sure, but also probably are very indicative of what's going on in the population.
Absolutely. I think it's certainly a trend that's been going up over the last, I would say, probably a couple decades. And, you know, the WHO has made that statement, and certainly we quote it. It'll play out, I guess, over the next generation as to what it actually is going to mean for these kids. But certainly we are seeing problems with things like cholesterol at very young ages. Type 2 diabetes is being diagnosed younger and younger. Things like that you wouldn't necessarily have seen in children are occurring now. So it is a big concern, absolutely.
Dr. LaFrance, do we have a clear-cut sort of picture of what the problem is? Because we often say to our athletes and the people we work with in our world, if we haven't accurately defined the problem, we have a real hard time fixing it.
And that's probably one of the main things around obesity, is that it's a multifactorial disease, meaning it has a number of causes. Dr. Arya Sharma is one of our thought leaders and you know, international obesity experts. He would say that there's a lot of causes, so he calls them root causes, that contribute to the obesity as a chronic disease. And those aren't just biological causes like genetics and metabolism and all of those kinds of things. Those are psychosocial causes. There's other factors that play in here. And, you know, that could be things as simple as, you know, your finances or how organized as a family you are to make meals, to have meals. It could be mental health concerns. There's lots of different things that can contribute to the picture of obesity. And that's where the challenge comes in, is that we need to be able to identify those causes they're family specific, they're patient specific, and once you identify them, only a certain number are modifiable, and of those, you have to have a partnership with your patient to be able to, you know, and the patient's family, because I deal with kids, so it's the patient's family that is the crux of the treatment here, to be able to make a difference.
We're talking with Dr. Rena LaFrance. Now, Dr. LaFrance, you have been involved in bariatric medicine for over 7 years, focusing on the biological, the psychological, and social determinants, which you kind of alluded to there. This is a fascinating twist to the whole obesity pandemic. It's not just this physiological issue that we have, like you mentioned, you know, with genetics and obesity, lack of exercise and poor food. There are many, many, as you mentioned, root causes. And this is fascinating, but we can also see now why people are having such a tough time dealing with this, because, you know, it seems so simple. You know, if we talk about the idea of calories in, calories out as just a simple a concept in dealing with health management, but it's much more than that. And even the adage of calories in, calories out, that doesn't even work that well.
Absolutely. You know, the eat less, move more idea, you know, we've tried that to death. It doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because we're not talking about basic, you know, physics or physiology. We're talking about biology, and there's a lot of things that contribute to an individual and how they process, you know, the food that they intake, how much, you know, output they can actually do, things like hormones. There's lots of different things that kind of muddy those waters, basically. And so when you're dealing with an individual and you're dealing with an individual's family, you're really looking at what is specific to that family as to why they may have a particular, you know, cause for what's happening for them. And I think, I guess one of the things that you bring up there is really important, that it's not just a matter of willpower. You know, it's not so easy as if I just restrict all of my food intake and I, you know, exercise this much every day, that this is magically going to be fixed, because there's more than that at play here. I mean, there's lots of things at play, but it's much more complicated than that.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned something earlier where I think it has a very important role in this whole conversation, is the fact that, you know, overworking, stress management, and hormones, for crying out loud, just on a daily basis, are having a massive effect. And not just that, but lack of sleep as well. All these things are sort of rolled into one. It's a big picture thing where it's not simple. And Dr. LaFrance, people who are dealing with it or trying to deal with it need professional help. This is not a simple issue.
Absolutely. And, you know, with that in mind, the province that we live in is trying to, you know, so Alberta is trying very hard to try to come up with a schema that's going to be able to help all Albertans to access care in their, you know, communities, so that we're better able to deal with this on the front lines, you know, and it's not just that you have to come to a specialty center in order to be able to access care, that there are going to be some things that are available to you within your community. And so that's what's going on right now from a provincial standpoint to try to help to address this, because it's a much bigger picture. And we're talking about sort of the individual things that affect a family. But when you talk also about the society things, you know, that affect a family as well and affect us all, the societal determinants, you know, things like marketing and, you know, marketing food to children and the bigger picture, it's a very complicated situation. And so it if I can get anything across today, the one thing that I would want to get across is that this is not just a matter of willpower. It is not a personal failing if you struggle with this. It is a chronic disease. And that is a paradigm shift. And it's a shift that's happened in Alberta, which is a wonderful thing because it takes most of the onus off the person. Absolutely, you contribute to your own health and you have to do things that can, you know, make you as healthy as possible. But that isn't necessarily a number on a scale. And also the other piece of it too is that there are certain people that will be perfectly healthy in every which way, you know, at a weight that we would consider to be high or higher, then it really is determined by that person's biology as well as to how they handle having excess adipose tissue or fat tissue.
We're talking with Dr. Rena LaFrance, the lead physician at the Pediatric Center for Weight and Health at the Misericordia Hospital here in Edmonton. While you bring up a couple of very, very interesting points there. So let me ask you this simple question, because this is maybe the question we need to get out there. How much should you weigh? I mean, you're so right. You can be a little heavy and be incredibly healthy. And we've seen people who are on the skinny side and not so healthy. So there's no magic number here.
Absolutely not. I mean, every person, I think, has an ideal weight range. With kids, we talk about, you know, percentiles. That's how we measure them. And so, you know, you start to get a bit concerned. You need to at least check above the 85th percentile for most children. But having said that, you may check them and they may be completely fine physiologically, biologically, mental health-wise, they're fine. They're not showing any lab abnormalities, and those are the guys you watch. You know, so there isn't we have the standard weight ranges. We have them broken down by ethnic background now. We know that certain ethnic backgrounds, if they have excess weight, will show problems sooner than other ethnic backgrounds, South Asians, for example. And so we do know that we need to be watching, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to do something active for, you know, everybody who may be presenting at a higher BMI than what has typically been thought of as normal. You know, and for those guys, perhaps you don't want to actively treat, but maybe you don't want them to gain more weight because maybe once they get up higher, then that's when problems will start. So it's really a balancing game. It's really a managing where you're at. And it's so specific to each person. I mean, I've seen the whole range where we'll see kids that are perfectly fine and shockingly fine when they're, you know, at a particular weight, and another kid at the same weight who, you know, you have to be a little bit more focused on. But for in pediatrics, we don't typically prescribe weight loss. We tend to try to, you know, change, you know, eating patterns and quality of food and quantity as to what would be reasonable for an individual during a day. That isn't necessarily a particular number. It's very patient specific.
Ah, and it sounds like, you know, establishing a good, healthy lifestyle, which, you know, can be elusive to a lot of people.
Absolutely. And the other piece that we find plays a great deal in this is sort of where are people at? You know, are they ready to make these changes?
Right.
And even if they're ready, are their life circumstances allowing them to be able to make these changes? All of that has to be factored in because, you know, if you are absolutely determined or your family is absolutely determined that they're going to make the changes that are necessary to achieve a healthier lifestyle, and then say they have the loss of a grandparent or a parent or something happens that's a big thing, it may not be the time. And so we have to factor in where the family is. And if they're not quite ready yet, it's okay to get them introduced to the idea without necessarily being too prescriptive about it, because that's a huge piece of this. I find within our practice at the hospital, you know, we really have to gauge where the families are at. Otherwise, there's no use in trying to make someone or some like a family do something where they're not ready to do it yet.
Well, Dr. LaFrance, if we look at the average day of an adolescent, the majority of that day is spent at school. Well, now here's some interesting things that have been going on, especially with our neighbors down in the States. We see the banning of soda and pops and juices and sports drinks in the schools. We've seen the ban on chocolate milk, which, you know, is good and bad, I suppose. But we're looking at the sugary drinks as maybe the front line. But now we see establishment getting involved in restricting the environment that our children are in. How do you think this is going to work out?
I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that one because, you know, I think it's one thing to not want these things in the environment at school. But, you know, we've been seeing a lot in the media, too, about, you know, taxing, you know, soda and taxing junk food. And the problem is, you know, unless we can replace that with a high quality food that doesn't cost a lot of money, you're basically penalizing the people that those are the foods that they can afford.
Right,
so the people that are socioeconomically on the poorer side of things. And so unless we have a good answer, you know, as to how we make quality, high nutrient content food more affordable, then I don't know that this is necessarily the answer. And it never seems to work really well to offer sort of punitive kind of,
exactly,
you know, responses, like we're going to ban this, we're going to tax you more. It doesn't seem to work very well. I think it's good for people to have the knowledge that if you're taking in sugary drinks and all those kinds of things and you're drinking your calories, and that's not necessarily going to make you feel full, it's not going to help your satiety. And so, you know, it's sort of a waste. You don't get good bang for your buck when you drink your calories. And that kind of education is probably better than putting sort of external, you know, controls where it feels like the families that are going to be going for the things that are maybe, you know, a little bit cheaper, that those things end up being these kinds of foods. And I just wouldn't want those families to be punished because of that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a balance there too.
I sure do. And I understand what you're saying. And I agree with you 100%. I wonder how much we should hold the companies responsible. Do we necessarily need 30 grams or 35 grams of sugar, depending which brand you buy, in a serving of chocolate milk, for crying out loud? This is
a big issue. I know. And that's the thing, right? These are companies. So they're going to produce a product that's going to make people want to have it, and the better it tastes, the more you're going to want it. And so they're, what they are trying to achieve and what we're trying to achieve aren't always the same thing. And I think, I hope that there'll be a point in the future. And I know there's physicians like Dr. Yanni Friedhoff out of Ottawa who are extremely passionate about this area, and really are trying to challenge the food industry and the beverage industry to be more responsible. And I think within the last week, Coca-Cola has now stepped up and said, you know, okay, maybe there's a problem here with drinking high sugar drinks and obesity. But, you know, it's a bigger picture too with what they're trying to achieve and what we're trying to achieve.
Well, Dr. LaFrance, you have a great website. It's healthyweightdoctor.com for anybody who wants information there. You had a great post the other day. Is the biggest loser bad for kids? Could you just maybe end the discussion with this conversation? Because I think this is very important.
Sure. And you know, the problem with programs like The Biggest Loser is that, you know, they sort of set up this artificial environment where people, if they eat a very controlled diet in a controlled setting, and they do a huge amount of exercise, then they will achieve extreme weight loss. And it's extreme. I mean, every week you're looking and some people are losing anywhere between, you know, 1 or 2 to, you know, 10 or more pounds. And that isn't necessarily normal, nor is it something that we would recommend. So that's one part. And then the other part is now including children within their show and their schema. And from my understanding, most of the children are not doing anything that's actually on camera. But the problem is, even watching these shows sets a bias against people who have weight issues or who are obese. And some of that stigma and that bias can stick to kids as well, you know. And so my worry for these children is that they're going to be stigmatized. They're going to be associated with something where they're going to be notorious from this TV show for much longer than the TV show is actually going to run. And I think we need to be really careful about setting up these sort of artificial situations where you're basically saying this is all about willpower, and then they do remove most of the external circumstances. You know, people aren't working. They're not taking care of their families. There's not all the other pressures that people in natural, normal life have to face day to day. And so you set up this totally artificial situation, and now we're bringing kids into that. And I think, you know, seeing 10-pound weight loss in a week isn't something that we should be encouraging.
Right.
It's not something that's sustainable necessarily. And so the attitudes that people, that the viewers may have towards these people, and some of them are negative attitudes, then can be transferred to the children. And so I think we just have to be really careful about the messaging that we're giving to kids, because kids are going to be watching this show with their family, and they're going to see kids on The Biggest Loser, and they're going to think that this is maybe something that they should be trying, or that this is the way that people with obesity are viewed. And I think we need to be very careful. And the other thing that personally makes me a little bit uncomfortable is, you know, the yelling and the screaming and the, you know, by some of the trainers and that sort of attitude that when someone is struggling with a chronic disease, you're going to yell at them. We don't do that for diabetes. You know, we don't do that for heart disease. But it's okay to yell at people with obesity. And so it's just some of the way, and that makes for good ratings, but that doesn't necessarily make for good, long, sustainable health.
Dr. LaFrance, listen, we really appreciate your time today, and I really can't wait for our next conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for having me on the show today. It's been wonderful. Thank
Great.
You.
There you go, a powerful conversation with Dr. Rena LaFrance as we look at the childhood side of the diabetes and obesity issues that we're facing today. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's delve more into the diabetes side with Dr. Mary Jetha on Crush Performance right after this.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander, and shows that'll make you think, like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
Welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Kershaw. Please get to us with any questions, comments, smart remarks. If you have ideas for shows or comments on past shows, let us know. crushperformance.com. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you are on Facebook, sign up to our group, The Talent Grid. Today, we continue our series on obesity with a look at the issues of childhood obesity and diabetes. Coming off a great conversation with Dr. Rena LaFrance, we now take a look at the issues of childhood diabetes with Dr. Mary Jetha.
And we are joined by Dr. Mary Jetha, pediatric endocrinologist at University of Alberta and the Stollery Children's Hospital. Dr. Jetha, thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be with you.
Well, interesting side note to our obesity expose is the increasingly alarming data that we see in relationship to diabetes. We look at some of the statistics where they're stating, you know, globally, there's about 347 million people worldwide that have diabetes, and they're expecting that number to grow exponentially by the year 2030. But more alarmingly, I think, is looking at the data they had from 2004, the mortality rates associated with diabetes. It's quite alarming, and we look at it. There are solutions, but it's still quite a convoluted and twisted tale.
I think so. I think you're right. We are seeing lots of this kind of data coming out and appearing in the news as well. So we're certainly hearing about it more often these days.
Well, I know in your practice, working at the Stollery Children's Hospital and dealing with obesity and diabetes, have you noticed trends in the recent while that have sort of made you sit back and wonder what is going on?
Well, I guess the first thing I just want to be sure we're clear on is that we're talking about type 2 diabetes when we're talking about its relationship to obesity and lifestyle. And so just that's a good thing to always keep in mind when you hear about diabetes in the news or in research. Just that distinction between type 1 diabetes, which is kind of a bad luck thing, just happens in children and has no bearing at all to the obesity rates or the obesity prevalence.
Right.
But type 2 diabetes is the real thing that I think we're more interested in as doctors and researchers, because we're seeing type 2 diabetes being diagnosed at younger ages these days.
Well,
I don't think I'm really seeing in my clinic a big surge in the numbers of children diagnosed, but it is true that this used to be what was thought to be an adult onset disease, and we're seeing it at younger and younger ages.
So when we look at it happening in our younger generations, what has changed that it's moving in that direction?
I think that it really boils down to the association with our changed environment in the world, our changed lifestyles over the years, and really the rise in obesity. So when we think about obesity, of course, there's so many different contributors and factors. Type 2 diabetes is really one of the effects of our more sedentary lifestyles, our changing food sources and supply, and really a culmination of that type of lifestyle that's becoming more and more common.
Right. I guess our aging population, too, on the other side of the coin, going away from our children, the aging population might have something to do with it as well.
I think so. I mean, diabetes used to be adult onset, used to be in later years because of years and years of, you know, a sedentary, unhealthy lifestyle. Now that we are seeing those lifestyles trickling down into our younger teenagers and younger children, this disease is happening in younger kids, and they're looking at a lifetime of type 2 diabetes, some of them.
We're talking with Dr. Mary Jetha, pediatric endocrinologist at the University of Alberta. Once we have a type 2 diabetes sort of setting in, is it preventable? Because we're getting a lot of interesting research saying that, you know, there are things you could do in your lifestyle to offset or at least delay the onset of the diabetes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When we're talking about type 2 diabetes in youth, I would have to say almost certainly preventable. But once it's once it's diagnosed, it's still preventable or reversible,
right.
I guess we would call it at that point.
Sure.
We will often see children with blood sugars in the diabetes range that can completely normalize when we start teaching and helping a child establish healthier eating patterns at home and at school and becoming more active.
Well, and that's very important, right? And activity levels are I guess, one of the key things. But the food we eat is very, very important. Of course, you know, talking with all the great doctors in our obesity expose, diet is a main factor, but it's a culmination of all these things put together that's really, really going to make the change.
I think so. Yep. There's really no one magic bullet for looking at type 2 diabetes or looking at excessive weight gain. But certainly all of the different factors and all the pieces that you can put into your life to establish healthier patterns and healthier living will make the difference.
Sure. Dr. Jetha, do you think that if people had a better knowledge of what diabetes is and what causes it, it might curb the increase we're seeing, especially in the childhood ages?
I think it can really help. I do think it's kind of a societal responsibility and task to really get the message out there. And I think we have to really emphasize that it's about health overall, not about a certain weight or only eating salads or
sure.
running marathon every day. That it's not about that. It's about overall balance in life, healthy choices, healthy portions, a healthy amount of activity. That is the real key.
Great. We're talking with Dr. Mary Jetha, pediatric endocrinologist at the Distillery Children's Hospital here in Edmonton. Well, let's talk about this then. So maybe people who don't really understand what diabetes is and how it works in the human body, maybe we could sort of lay out a roadmap for them. We know that insulin is the hormone that sort of regulates blood sugar in the body, and diabetes, I guess really simply put, is the body's inability to utilize that insulin properly. Would that be a fairly accurate description?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think what many people will be wondering is what happens? How
right.
come my insulin isn't working properly, and why would I be getting diabetes at such a young age? And the way I like to explain it to some of the children that I see in clinic and their families is that any time where we take in more calories than our body needs, our body doesn't have a way to get rid of it, and so the body just stores it. So unlike if you are filling up your car with gas, if you overflow the tank, it just spills out. But our body doesn't really work that way. So if we overfill our tank, our body just stores the excess in fat in our body, under our skin, and inside our body, in our abdomen, inside our tummy, around our organs. And as that continues and sort of progresses and goes on and on over years, that affects the ability of our body to use the insulin properly. So it's like our body becomes less sensitive to the insulin. When the body becomes less sensitive to the insulin, it has to make more. So it makes more and more insulin to try to overcome the inability to use it properly. And at some point, it just can't keep up with that anymore. And the blood sugars become too high and out of control. That's type 2 diabetes. When we think about that, we have to reverse that at, you know, sort of the first stage. Which comes back down to the weight and the healthy eating and the activity.
And then the body readjusts and gets back into action. The body is an incredible organism if you think about it, but we have to still treat it with respect.
Yeah, I agree. But we, in pediatrics and when we're helping children and helping teenagers, we have a little bit of advantage because of the young age. And
right.
the body's even better at that when you're young. And so, that's why I really enjoy working in this area, because there's some real, we have a lot of hope for kids because youth is on their side.
Sure. Well, we're talking with Dr. Mary Jetha, the pediatric endocrinologist at University of Alberta and the Stollery Children's Hospital here in Edmonton. Dr. Jetha, now we've had some great discussions here, as I mentioned, in the past weeks about the obesity and potentially how to get in control of it. And, you know, two major populations that we're talking about as sort of a focal point for turning this thing around, of course, women of childbearing age and mothers of children. But the family unit as a whole is maybe the most important group of people in terms of turning this around, because our children are really the key to the future. When the World Health Organization says to the world's population that we're looking at the first generation of children who may have a shorter lifespan than their parents, that is incredibly alarming. We've got to do something.
Yeah, I agree. I think it does come down to the family. Children are, it's very ineffective to meet a child or youth in my clinic and say, now you just need to start eating right and start exercising.
Right.
They live in their environment, in their family, and what they're learning is how their family does things, and to really work alongside the family to help the whole family establish a healthier way of life that's going to lead to health is really the key.
I guess it's a change of lifestyle, right? It's simple things like, you know, we don't want to override this idea of eating breakfast, but starting the day with a good, healthy breakfast, not just in terms of eating a breakfast, but what you eat. And I'm just going to go from a past experience here the last couple of weeks. I had one of the coaches on one of the teams that I work with. It's a young developmental club. And one of the coaches came up and said, Jeff, listen, we got to have a meeting with these parents. I was just talking to one of the young athletes here before we went out to start training, and their breakfast was a bag of Doritos and a ginger ale. And for crying out loud, if that's an acceptable mindset, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, there's a lot of angles to come from it. The choices, the amounts. And like I said, there's not one certain thing that's going to make the difference. I think overall, we have to have a little bit of a re-look at our lives and the way we eat and some of our societal pressures. Often I feel like we're walking an uphill route against all of the forces and pressures in society around us that are making it so easy for us to make poor choices in our health.
Well, the availability of cheap, quick food, the availability of, you know, the snacks and the fast food, but the marketing especially, and the marketing to children has been one of the areas of concern that have come up here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think also the busyness of family life, you know, the pressures and the stresses on families and the kind of grab and go food because we're on our way to soccer or on our way home from hockey, which are great activities, but sometimes that can be a real contributor to poor food choices.
We're almost defeating the purpose. We're talking with Dr. Mary Jetha, pediatric endocrinologist at the University of Alberta. Well, if families are interested, and I think everybody is, Dr. Jetha, interested in doing the right thing, are there resources out there for moms and dads or even, you know, teenagers to go and check out, hey, what should we be doing?
Well, I think there are quite a few things online. A dietitian in the community is always a good source. You've probably heard in some news recently in the last year or two about who you hang out with really has an effect on you.
Definitely.
And so I think one of the resources that people can really look for is, where can I go where there are people who are trying to get healthy and are doing healthy things, whether that's at a gym or a club or a group of people from, you know, work or whatever, that you can feed off each other in some of these ways.
Yeah, great stuff. So, you know, if we're looking at the idea, say we have a family who's listening today or a person who's listening who has type 2 diabetes, and maybe they, well, we hope they're all informed quite well, but maybe they don't really understand that there is an opportunity for them to really turn this thing around. What would be the first steps or the process they might go through to really get back in control of their bodies?
Well, certainly at the Stollery Children's Hospital, any youth, teenagers or children that are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes are brought into our clinic as soon as we can see them, just to start the process and the teaching and the thinking and one step at a time to help the child and the family turn things around. So any child diagnosed with type 2 diabetes can be referred to the Stollery and get a multidisciplinary team approach to healthy living there. The other great resource we have in Edmonton here is the Pediatric Center for Weight and Health, which is a clinic that helps, again, children and families manage weight. So children that are in the overweight or obese categories with their BMI can be referred, again, for just help in from dietitians, exercise specialists, physicians, nurses, counseling, to help look at the possible contributing factors that they're experiencing and how to make changes in these areas one by one, one step at a time, to get on a healthier path.
Great, Dr. Jetha, and that's the key. Step by step, a slow process to turn this thing around. And again, it's that family pod, that family environment that is so important moving forward when we talk about obesity and diabetes in particular.
Yes, and I think families should be really encouraged. You know, sometimes it does feel like a mountain to climb when you take a hard look at your life and think, there's so many things that I need to change. But one step at a time is still in the right direction. And this you know, it really is possible. And I sometimes compare it to learning how to play soccer or learning how to play the piano. It takes practice. Practice every day and then check in once a week and trial and error, and you have some successes and you have some setbacks, and that's okay. That's how we learn to change and grow. And I think that people should really be encouraged by that. This is possible.
Dr. Jetha, if we have children out there and parents are going, well, what's wrong with my child? And it hasn't been diagnosed yet. Are there signs and symptoms, warning signs? Because obviously catching it early is very important.
I think when we look at how a child is growing and the heights and weights of children, it's easy to become too focused on this, but it's a great screening tool for just general health. And a family doctor, pediatrician, healthcare provider can really just help assess a child's growth and know whether there's any warning signs in the growth that are concerning. Almost the large majority of kids that are getting into trouble with their weight and type 2 diabetes are gaining weight much more quickly than they're growing in height. Mm-hmm. And so we use weight and BMI just as a screening. Not as a diagnosis, but as a screening to look at. Ooh, are we looking at a bit of a problem here? The medical conditions and diseases or syndromes that can cause obesity are so rare and fairly easy for a physician to pick up. So I would discourage families against really looking for what's the reason,
right,
and looking more at, okay, let's have a look at our overall health as our family and see where we can make changes to be healthier.
There you go, a very sensible, holistic, and simple approach to dealing with childhood obesity and diabetes with Dr. Mary Jetha. Stay tuned. Next week, we continue our expose looking into the pandemic of worldwide obesity. Could it be more than just our diet and exercise? Are there chemicals in our environment and food chain that are causing us to gain weight? Well, Dr. Bruce Bloomberg, professor of cellular biology and biomedical science at the University of California, thinks so. He's found something called obesogens. We'll discuss this in next week's episode, and we'll look at the power of moms, who single-handedly change how an industry goes about their business for the health of their families. We'll talk to you then.